Audrey helps actors because they don't know anything.
Hi, everybody. I'm Audrey Moore with Audrey Helps Actors. And today we have
Caroline Leem
and
Jesse Lumen.
You know, Caroline Leem, I didn't realize it was Leem.
It is Leem. And, it, you know, people say, oh, Liam.
Right? I do. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Because people, no, it's Leem.
Oh, good. You know, one of my favorite things is knowing people for a considerable amount of time and then having them on the podcast and realizing I've been saying their name incorrectly for a long time. So today we are going to be talking about story. This is our first of a few bonus episodes that we're doing where we're specifically addressing story because we have had so many requests and outpouring from listeners wondering, like, what the hell does Audrey mean when Audrey talks about story? It's a really big point, I feel, of learning how to be a booking actor over just a solid, facile actor. Mm-hmm. And as this casting process goes so fast that we are not afforded the luxury of a real work session as much anymore, where somebody's really going to see what you bring to the table and then work it with you. Quentin Tarantino does it, but like kind of short of that, and Star Wars, I hear, does a good work session. So short of those two, it happens so infrequently these days. So the job of the actor to really understand story and then understand what they bring to the story and having that be something that they can sort of marry as quickly as possible so that the work really starts to get some depth. It's sort of, to me, the current challenge of the audition landscape.
Yeah, and I think part of that is also people get the appointment because we know that they, from our point of view, we know that they fit.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Either we've seen their reel, we've seen them in a show, they've been referred to us and we've looked at their materials, we've worked with them before.
Yes.
But then there's honoring the script and then there's bringing yourself to it.
Yes.
And I think that's when we get in the room, we go, oh my gosh, that person is the role. Mm-hmm. That person is it. There is nobody else because they found a way to take the writer's words, make it their own. Mm-hmm. And when we see, we're so visual, aren't we? You know, before anyone ever speaks, we already have an idea of what we think they are.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. And so if you came to the room, I would go, this is a nice person. This is somebody who I could hang out with on the cul-de-sac.
Totally. That's so much fun. Right? Like, you do this for a living. It's exactly my casting. No. Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
But then we break the ice. Yeah. We get to know each other. I see a little of your work.
Yeah.
We do talk to each other. Mm-hmm. So, and we do ask each other, you know, different casting offices,
sure.
you know, what's each other's story with an experience with actors. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then I find out, oh, you're not just the lady on the cul-de-sac who I might have coffee with or, you know, get some sugar from.
Sure.
But you're also somebody who I'd probably play a mean Mexican train with or poker.
Totally.
Right? Yeah. And so
and
now
it's hilarious.
So now I've got some edge. Mm-hmm. And now I think, oh, so you've got this beautiful package, but underneath it is something that is really going to be unexpected. And how fabulous is that to be able to bring in the room?
Thank you. And what I love about what you just explained, which is something that I try to talk about on this podcast a lot, is that how much of that reveal you get to bring is really, to me, so much about the size of the role, right? So often, if you're going to play a co-star, I may only get in a co-star that, you know, borrow a cup of sugar from me in the cul-de-sac, right? Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes people can get confused because they think, well, everyone sees me as this thing, but I feel like I'm that thing. And I'm always like, that's great. You can be both. And that's just really about whether or not you get the opportunity to have, I would say, a role to sort of bring both really to a role, you know, no matter the size. But in all of it, making sure that it's not becoming self-indulgent, that it's serving the story, that if I'm trying to bring like a more interesting version of the girl in the cul-de-sac just because I feel like it, then I'm being a self-indulgent actor as opposed to an actor who's coming in to help everyone solve this story.
Exactly. And another aspect to that is also when you get those appointments and I have actors who look at this all the time and go, I'm not coming in for this. This isn't me. I don't identify with this, yes. blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
But I see something different.
Mm-hmm.
And there may also be another role that's coming around that may not be released right. that I might be thinking of you for. Mm-hmm. But I need you to come in for this one.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. and so the breakdown doesn't match. You don't yep. feel like it's your essence. You don't feel like it's your vibe. Yes. I insist. The agent says no. I say yes. They show up.
Right, right.
And what I always tell them is, bring yourself to the role. Mm-hmm. That's all I care about within mm-hmm. the circumstances.
That's exactly
just
right.
Do the work within the circumstances with your vibe.
Okay, right. So we're going to go ahead and get into it today.
All right.
So today we're going to break down Finding Nemo. Now, the reason that we chose Finding Nemo, in addition to being like the best ever, is actually because it is a perfectly written story. It has a perfect A storyline, B storyline, the arcs, the archetypes, the characters that help move our heroes forward, and the characters that help, you know, set them back. It's mm-hmm. so great to, when you watch it as you understand the story, you're just going to be awestruck by how just elite these Pixar storytellers are, right?
It's very, very well constructed.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the reason for that is that Pixar does this thing where they make the movie 5 to 10 times before they complete it. So they'll write the script, they'll make a very rough version of it, mm-hmm. and then they'll all watch that and be like, well, what do we think? Do we like this part? No, yes, no. And then they scrap the whole thing yes. and then start all over again and remake it and then remake it and then remake it. So we're really seeing like the 5th or 6th or 10th version of Finding Nemo mm-hmm. by the time we see it.
So we're going to actually talk about casting Finding Nemo, but we'll talk about it like if we're going to do live action. Okay, so Jesse, this is called Finding Nemo. So I wanted everyone to know it's really important to look at the title. Title of not just the show, but the title of the episode, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So if you were going out for The Good Doctor, it's called The Good Doctor. It's not called The Bad Nurse. It's not called The Chaotic Hospital. It's called The Good Doctor. So we know who our protagonist is, and we know what their journey is about. It's about being a good doctor. So here we have Finding Nemo. So, Jesse, is this Nemo's story?
It's not actually Nemo's story.
It is not Nemo's story, is it? Whose story is it?
It's Marlin's story because he's the one who's Finding Nemo.
Oh my God, it just makes me cry already. Like, it just makes me so soups of emotion. So beautiful. Let's set up the first beat of this story.
So the first beat of this story is Marlin, our protagonist, and his wife, Coral.
Mm-hmm.
And they've just moved into this new home. It's right at the edge of the water. It's this beautiful view of the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a million kids that are about to hatch.
Right.
And their life is perfect. He's yes. got, you know, our protagonist has the perfect wife, the perfect home, mm-hmm. the perfect, you know, group of kids about to come.
Mm-hmm.
And then tragedy happens.
The barracuda life.
The barracuda comes
yes.
and kills his wife,
mm-hmm.
all of his kids, mm-hmm. except for one.
Which she had prenamed to be
Nemo.
That's right. Okay, great. So we have A storyline and B storyline. So A storyline, we've got Marlin is trying to find Nemo. So let's talk a little bit about that.
So that's the A storyline. The protagonist's journey is usually the A storyline. And there's sort of two ways you can look at the protagonist's character arc.
Okay.
There's the hero's journey,
mm-hmm.
which is the external journey he's going on, right? That's like the plot, the structure. Marlin has to go through the big, bad, deep ocean
yes.
to find Nemo and save him.
Yes.
So that's the hero's journey.
Right.
The other way to look at it is theme. Mm-hmm. So that's more of why he's doing it, mm-hmm. how he has to change internally, what internal journey he's going to go on.
I love this because that really particularly pertains to the actor.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
So the external journey, the hero's journey is
Find Nemo.
Find Nemo. And then the internal journey is?
So the internal journey, a theme is always sort of an argument, a dramatic argument. Mm-hmm. And in Finding Nemo, it's no matter how much you want to hold the person you love, sometimes you have to set them free. Mm-hmm. And so Marlon's journey then, his theme, his internal journey, is to go from the opposite of that. Mm-hmm. And by the end, he has to learn that lesson. So in the beginning, he's this helicopter parent who's neurotic, mm-hmm. who doesn't want to let anything go at all.
And justifiably, that's absolutely. A great journey is set up by pure understandable justifications by the protagonist. It's not because Marlon is a jerk. It's because he had the perfect life. Everything was set up near and dear to him. And then Barracuda came and destroyed it all. So then we have B storyline. Let's talk about B storyline.
So B storyline is the other main story that happens that we sort of cut to every once in a while. Mm-hmm. And in this movie, that is Nemo trying to escape from the prison tank, essentially, before Darla kills him.
Right.
That's sort of the ticking time clock on the whole thing. That's his external struggle. And mm-hmm. Nemo's internal struggle is to really believe in himself and find that he has the inner strength, even with his perceived disability. He can escape. He can live on his own.
And one thing that you said about a storyline B that I just really want to emphasize, because this is a story essential. This goes back to 24, our favorite show. Mm-hmm. There is, and this is what they always teach you, and I have learned, it's like, oh, I see what we're doing. There is a clock on the scene. So the clock on B storyline, which sets the motion for the clock for the entire movie, is Darla.
Yep.
That Darla's going to come in, get Nemo in a bag, shaky, shaky, shaky. Nemo's going to die. But wait, Caroline and Jesse, wait. I have to interrupt you.
We interrupt your regularly scheduled program to bring you shit you don't know about your recession.
All right, so now it's time to talk about shit you don't know about your recession. So you guys, I really want to discuss with you some realities, and I want to talk to you about what you can be doing during these realities and sort of give you some empowered encouragement. Because I was in Los Angeles pursuing acting during the last recession, and I'm here to tell you that there were some things that I did well that I'm going to tell you that I think you should do, and then there were some things that I did really poorly, and I'm going to encourage you not to do those things that I did really poorly. So what happened in 08 and how it's different from the current climate is that the money sort of shut down. And that had a large effect on investments that were risk-taking and also investments for commercials. So that really brings me to what I want to talk about, which is like this recession that we're looking at. You know, when listening to economists and reading articles, people do feel there's going to be like the roaring 20s again. So remember the last flu like this happened in 1918, and then there was the roaring 20s. And so with every contraction, there is an expansion eventually. And I do believe the expansion will come, but it's going to be a minute before we get the expansion back. So what to do with yourself during this contraction? So the three key areas that I feel are really valuable is earning money, building relationships, and growing the clarity and quality of your materials. If you spent these next 1 to 2 years, I don't know how long it's going to be, working and getting yourself out of some financial holes, really just earning, earning, earning. That's one thing I did that I'm so glad I did. I worked 6 shifts a week at the restaurant. I picked up more shifts if I could. I was just really focused on earning. And a lot of you communicate to me through social media that part of what is really hard is feeling like you have the finances to invest in your career. And if you took this time period to fill some maybe debt holes that you've got going on, and in addition to start growing some investment piles so that you have the ability to come out of this financially well, financially clear, and having some ability to really invest thoughtfully into your work and into the amount of investment that we've talked about so much in this podcast that really is required to stay competitive. You can do it without it, but it's a lot harder. So in the time when there maybe isn't going to be auditions for you, creating some funds so that when the auditions come back, you're in the position to be the most competitive that you can be, that would be a fantastic investment in this time. So then we have lining up your materials in quality and in execution. We talk a lot on this podcast about clarity of what it is that you bring to the table, whether you want to call that casting or whatever you want to call that, your essence, really understanding, I hope you can see in this story podcast, why knowing what you bring, what are some inherent essences that you bring? What natural status do you bring? What natural qualities of maybe fragility or dominance do you bring that's natural to your inherent essence? How your body and frame and all of that look, how that all translates to how the story is told through you, how the character sits on you, and how that can be used to help solve a story. If you spend this time earning money and then investing money into clarity of what you do and also the representation of quality of what you do, so working on being coached by people to figure out how to master the audition, how to come out of this and be like an audition ninja, a one-take dragon, right? If that's something that you spent this time on, you would be so valuable when things got opened back up. And then if your headshots weren't just these headshots you had some friend take or weren't the headshots that you could afford, but you really spent the time to earn money to then invest in headshots that really represent what you bring and what you bring best. And then also footage. You know, for a lot of you, you've been shooting stuff with your friends. You've been cobbling together some short films. Some of you don't have any footage. And if you spent this time, you know, either getting somebody to shoot it real for you professionally, or really if you want to be a creator and you want to invest your time and energy into working on your filmmaking skills, working on developing material for yourself, working on executing that material, getting a little company together of writers, directors, DPs, sound guys, editors, and then coming out of this next year or two with some finances, some investment funds that you can use to invest in your career, some disappearing of some debts, a clarity on your casting and what you bring to the table, and some really high quality materials in terms of headshots, in terms of footage, and then investing in relationships. Okay, so we've talked about earning and we've talked about your materials and your execution. We're going to pause and then we're going to come back later in the podcast and we're going to talk about building relationships and the value of relationships.
And now back to your regularly scheduled program.
So one of my first characters that I think we really need to talk about is Coral, Caroline. So Let's talk about, because this sets the tone for Marlon's change, Marlon's journey, right? So it's such an imperative role. What are the qualities that you would be looking for in an actor if you were casting them in Coral's role?
Sure. So this, we're going to call person.
Great. Yeah. Okay. Exactly.
So this person is on for 5 minutes, right? So the person's got to be memorable.
Yes.
Okay. And part of that is a confidence that I must see the moment they enter the room. But there's a nurturing quality, right? She's got 400 eggs.
Yes.
Okay. So, and she's a strong woman. She works hard. You know, you try to take what's given on the page and now equate it to human descriptives. And so I'm going to find somebody who's the appropriate age.
Yes.
I don't want you to be younger. I don't want you to be older. I just want you to be appropriate.
Yes. So this is the age of somebody who is about to have children.
Yes.
This is a great role if we were doing stunt casting for somebody who didn't have a ton of time between movies, but was memorable and could draw some attention, somebody that you'd want on the carpet, and somebody that you already identify as a maternal, strong, likable character.
Yes, and can also go toe-to-toe with our main guy, Marlon.
Yes.
So it's got to be somebody who can better or equal as far as
star quality, star power.
I agree. Yeah, I really like it. Isn't going to be intimidated by the star power of whoever we cast as our lead, Marlon.
Another thing about The Room, this is for all the characters we're going to talk about.
Yes.
I'm looking for collaboration in The Room. That's so important. You've read the script. You've done your homework.
Yes.
You've added, you know, these qualities of you. You've brought your story to the table. Mm-hmm. Now you're going to share it. And now I've got vision that you don't have, and I'm going to want to play around with it. And I need you to be able to collaborate and adjust and be flexible and facile and want to, you know, tell the best story, not your story.
Yeah, I think also some of the most important things about Coral is that she's maternal and she's nurturing, right? There's a moment where she decides to sacrifice herself, essentially, for her children.
A very important moment, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
She chooses. And she has a choice. That's the thing.
You see her make it, too.
Yes. Yeah. And I always talk with actors about that. We all know what comes next in the script, but the character doesn't.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so for the actor, I'm always looking for you to make the strongest choice for you.
Right. And so what I love about that is that's so as an actor, you know, so often we hear this, you know, make sure that they're, you're playing the whole scene one note and I'm getting the whole thing, or you're playing the end at the beginning, or I don't see you change. And so what I want you to understand, this is such a great opportunity to talk about story with this little moment that Coral gets, right? Because she really does get a turn as a character. Mm-hmm. You see her go from just a little playful, maternal, loving. They're kind of a little sexy to each other, right? Yeah. And then focus when she sees the barracuda in the distance. And she, it is like something completely takes over her. And it is a sense of whatever that would mean for the actor. However, the actor would internalize that. Mm-hmm. How is that personal to me? Where have I been in my life where I have been stunned with fear and have in that moment had to make a choice to go beyond my fear and make sacrifices for the good of people that I love, namely my family? Is it going to read when I'm in a casting office and the camera's 6 feet away and the casting person is in a chair? Like, is this sense of fear and panic or fear in headlights? And then the decision to protect my family, is that coming through?
Yeah.
Not because Audrey wants to just like show off, but because it's imperative to the whole rest of the journey.
It sets up the entire
film. Story.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, great. So we have this moment, Barracuda comes, and now we really begin Marlon's journey. Yeah. Now, Jesse, as a writer-director, let's talk about the things that really encapsulate Marlon's personality in a way that sets us up to have to fight against it to get to a change.
Right. So Marlon, his whole journey is to go across the most dangerous ocean in the world with all of these horrible things in it to try to get to his son, right? And so we want to make that as hard as we possibly can for him so that it's a fun journey to watch, so that he really has to overcome as much as possible, right? So if Marlon is a Marlon or a shark, that journey is a lot easier, right?
Let's talk about what kind of a fish a marlin is.
Yeah, so marlins are like game fish. They're the ones with the giant swords.
They're forces to be reckoned with.
Yeah.
And marlin is, in fact, not a marlin.
No.
He's a
clownfish.
Right. And the best part about him being a clownfish is, what does everyone want from him?
They want him to be funny.
That's right.
He's not funny.
He's not funny. And why can't he be funny?
Because he's too uptight. His whole family died.
Yep.
You know, he has no time to be funny. He's like, he's holding on to everything so tight that he can't be loose enough to tell even a joke.
I love it. It's so good.
And so if you're so uptight that you can't even tell a joke, how can you possibly swim across the entire ocean and go through sharks and jellyfish and landmines and everything else to get to your son? It feels impossible. Mm-hmm. It's like Lord of the Rings. You give it to Frodo, the littlest little guy in the world, to climb up through, you know, all of the orcs. And, you know, there's like wizards and everyone else. Like, why do you give it to Frodo? Because it's really hard for Frodo to do that.
Yeah.
Like, you feel like Gandalf, he could just kind of teleport.
Yeah.
Frodo! Toto?
Yeah.
How the fuck is this guy going to get there?
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
So Marlin is our Frodo, essentially. He's small. He's neurotic. Mm-hmm. He's a helicopter parent who doesn't want to let anything go. Mm-hmm. And also, he's small and not built for swimming.
Yes.
He's not built for swimming long distances.
No long distance. Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a tropical fish. Yeah. And he has to go through cold parts, you know, he has to go through this entire ocean, and he should really just be only living in this little
reef. That little reef.
Exactly.
That's what he's built for.
Yeah, that's what he's built for. And so he has to go out into this new world, and he is essentially a fish out of water.
Oh my God. High five. He is a fish out of water. But here's what I love about this too, is I hope everyone can see, because I think so often actors overlook all of these details because we don't realize, like, no, this choice was chosen, and it was chosen for a very specific reason. Mm-hmm. They didn't make it, they named him Marlin, but made him a clownfish on purpose. Mm-hmm. That wasn't accidental. Mm-hmm. And they made him a clownfish who can't tell jokes to, like, further the point about how neurotic he is. So as an actor, you're told in acting school, listen to what other characters say about you and what you say about you, and know that that's what you have to bring to the table.
Yep.
He says about himself, he sees the little anglerfish light.
Yes.
And he's sort of mesmerized and high. He says, I'm feeling happy, which for me is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a real flag to any actor. And why getting the full script and reading it is so imperative, is you get these little gems. And also, the turtle turns to him and says, loosen up, bro. And so that's something somebody is directly saying to your character. You need to relax.
Yeah.
So you need to know that you need to be bringing the opposite.
Yeah, they're seeing it.
They're seeing it.
They're seeing it and telling you.
Commenting on it. Right, yeah. Exactly. So, Caroline, what do you think about Marlin?
So from the act, I love Marlin.
Yeah, he's great.
You know, because I love that he's just not funny and that they demand jokes, you know? Love that.
Yes.
You know? And there's also a sense of, there's a dryness about Marlin.
Oh, so real.
Which I freaking love dry humor.
That's so good.
I'm all, please just take all of the love out of it. Just give me dryness. I love that lack of sparkle because it just makes me like roll on the floor. And Marlin has the highs and the lows of that.
So true.
So not every actor can do that.
Yes.
You know?
And here's something that I want to say about that. I personally, if I were directing this, I would really be looking for an actor that I know is going to anchor that.
Okay.
Because this is the person that is leading the movie. And what I want you to understand, you guys, is when you snap out a delusion that they're going to hire you for leads on big budget movies, part of the snap out delusion is really having an understanding of, well, what would I be hiring? And being the lead of a film is a very exhaustive journey.
Yeah.
And so I need somebody that's going to be this and bring, because it's a lot of energy.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, you can think that being dry, but he's got so much neuroses and so much going on. It's
so heavy under there.
Yes.
And then you have to carry it and you have to bring everybody else along with you. Gosh,
I think size is also really important to me in casting this actor. I would not be looking for a large actor. I would be looking for a smaller actor.
I like that. I would also add to it somebody who's comfortable enough in their skin, but maybe rolls out of bed in the morning.
Okay. Yeah. I like that. Yeah.
A little disheveled, but very clear when he has to be.
That I love that distinction because when he is determined and when he needs to, he goes. And, and that confidence gets thrown off all the time by this.
It's challenged.
It's challenged.
It's challenged. And he's not ready for the challenge, but then he becomes ready.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Because he has to.
That's his hero's journey.
That's it, hero's journey. But anything else you want to say about Marlin? I like age appropriate. What age range would you be looking for this?
40s.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So then let's talk about Nemo. Jesse, talk to us about Nemo.
Nemo is, he's really small.
Mm.
He's adventurous.
Mm-hmm.
He's excited. He has a disability.
Mm-hmm.
And he's sort of living under the overprotective shelter of his dad.
Yes.
And so he feels, you know, he feels like he needs to kind of escape out of that and become his own self and prove to the world that he can be his own man. He doesn't have to hide his whole life.
He doesn't have to be protected. He can fend for himself.
Exactly.
Right. And so they give him, and I just want you guys to know this isn't an accident, they give him a physical impairment to make it all that much harder.
Exactly.
That he's not just a little clownfish, but he's a little clownfish with a little bitty fin.
With a bum fin.
So that I want everyone to know, again, that's a choice. That's a choice yes. created by the writers. Mm-hmm. That he could have not had that. And so for me, if you're an actor and you're going to play this character trepidatious, it goes against why they gave him the physical impairment in the beginning, because he's got this physical impairment that already impairs him. So it's like he's got this boisterous quality that sends him forward into independence. And it's this little thing, this little fin.
Yeah.
That sort of hinders that.
Which is why Marlon and us can worry about him.
Right? So true.
Is because right. we feel a little scared because it's like, oh, you can't swim as well as everybody else.
You can't swim into that big blue ocean.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Uh-huh. And so we're a little scared for you, but mm-hmm. who you are on the inside, that's what he has to learn by the end, right? Mm-hmm. Is who he is mm-hmm. can overcome that. You know, it's not actually a disability. He can be and do whatever he needs to do. And he is, in fact, good at things that other people aren't good at.
Yeah, I mean, in mm-hmm. so again, with what characters say about you, Marlon says consistently when he gets to school, he isn't a good swimmer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, that's why we're worried about him. He isn't a good swimmer, but he's in the ocean. Yep. Right?
Right.
Okay, so Caroline, what do you got for us?
I love the idea of the disability.
Yes.
And the physical disability.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we would cast
yes.
a performer with disability.
Yes, yeah. I just love
period.
That. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And what I love so much about 2020, and, you know, I just recently attended the Artios Awards, which you helped to organize and put together, and I love so much mm-hmm. the commitment by casting for underrepresented communities. And it seems really the target-focused mission right now with the CSA. And I was so moved by the consistent messaging and heartfelt value of that importance.
We just completed our Native American Indigenous Actor open call, mm-hmm. and that followed our town hall for that. And we're in the final part, gathering the self-tapes for those who couldn't make the open calls.
Mm.
And that goes into a huge database and will be shared with the casting directors so we can circulate it and talk with producers and directors yes. and studios and networks, and let's get some change going. And we're getting a lot of response from the studio networks.
That.
They're just really amazing.
I love that.
But to have the performers with disabilities, mm-hmm. The Native Americans, the Manasa, mm-hmm. Transgender, LGBTQ
yeah.
plus. I mean, it's
all of it.
There are all these communities
yes.
that no one is shining a light on.
I know.
And to be able to sit in a room with them, and it isn't just them reading a scene.
Mm-hmm.
It's great job on the scene. Here's a redirect, but what do you want to share with us? What do we need to
I
know?
I love that. Yeah, that's so
great. Those are the conversations that we're having. So it's been great. Yeah. So circling back to our
Nemos.
Little Nemo.
So what age range would you be looking at? Because I know there people don't understand about child labor laws as well. It says in the script that it's his first day of school. Right. I think that's important because it's his first real step to have to be forced out.
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, casting a 5-year-old, 6-year-old as your lead would be really challenging. So a rewrite might need to be in order where mm-hmm. he's been homeschooled up to a certain point of time and now he's starting school, but in a junior high level, maybe. What age range would you be looking for?
9 to 12.
Great. 9 to 12 mm-hmm. to play younger.
To play younger.
Great.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
We would look at so many children.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who wants.
Always do, right?
Anyone who wants to come in, we would, mm-hmm. this would be a big search.
But also, you'd be looking for a child with disabilities.
Absolutely.
A 9 to 12-year-old
performer
with disabilities.
And maybe not a performer.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we would go into schools. We would talk mm-hmm. to drama clubs. We would mm-hmm. Go to the different organizations.
Love that.
It would be a big search.
Great.
Nemo's a big character.
He's a huge character.
Yeah.
He's the title character.
He is the title character.
Yeah.
I don't know if Nemo would be a boy or a girl.
That's a good question. I think it could be either.
I think it could be also. And so as a casting director, we always ask, you know, can we open this up to any mm-hmm. ethnicity? Can we open this up to any disability? Are we open? So this is one of those roles. There's several in this film.
Okay, great. So, yeah. Okay, so now let's move to my favorite character. Oh, my God, she's my hero. Dory. So, Jesse, tell us a little bit about Dory. And I'm going to look up, I think she's an angelfish, but let's look at Dory.
Oh, I know exactly what she is.
What is she?
She is a Pacific Regal Tang.
Oh my goodness. I would be interested in why a Pacific Regal Tang, and I would research that because I'm sure it's a choice, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so Jesse, tell us about Dory.
So Dory is like obviously really enthusiastic and persistent. Mm-hmm. She can't remember things. She has a huge memory problem.
And why is that a really important? So we have our protagonist and we have our A storyline. And really the two leads of the A storyline is Marlin and Dory and their journey into the great deep blue sea, right? So why, they don't have to give her this amnesia, but they do. And it's funny, but it's also a great plot device. So why is it a great plot device?
He's relying on Dory a lot, right? Mm-hmm. And if she's constantly forgetting everything, it makes it that much harder. Right? It makes it a companion that doesn't remember who you are half the time or can't remember what the address is or anything like that.
Right.
Makes it a much harder journey.
Yes.
But also, I think the most important part about Dory is that she is an embodiment of the theme, right? She is the opposite of what Marlin is. She is completely carefree.
Yeah.
She would be the opposite of a helicopter parent.
Yeah, she's, well, because she can't be a helicopter parent because she literally can't remember anything. So she has to live her entire life in flow and hope and belief in things because she could not operate otherwise.
Yeah, she just has to live on faith and enthusiasm.
That's so it. She has to live on faith and enthusiasm. Right, which is the opposite of his journey.
Yeah, which is, it's important to have her by his side the whole time because that's the lesson that he needs to learn. Mm-hmm. And he's not going to learn it in like one scene. Mm-hmm. It's going to take him a whole movie to learn that. Mm-hmm. And it's going to take someone hitting him over and over in the head about it to learn it. Mm-hmm. And because that's what we want. We want a journey that's hard for him, just like the journey across the ocean is hard for him. The journey internally is hard for him.
Yeah, it's such a good role.
So great. Good.
Great.
Isn't it interesting that Dory's character throughout just brings people together or brings the animal kingdom together, you know?
Yes, right. She's
throughout.
She doesn't have these, unlike Marlin, she doesn't have these predisposed beliefs of people being dangerous, which is his like number one MO, is you can't trust anyone and you can't trust anything. And she's like, shark? Sure.
You're right.
She's like, jellyfish? I don't know. You know, whatever it is, whale? Great. Like
turtles,
love. Like she's just yes-anding the
entire
movie. And he's saying no, no, no. And she's saying yes, yes, yes.
So in casting, we need somebody with that energy.
Yeah, love it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a physicality. Mm. It's somebody who's positive, you know, or, you know, can act it really well.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Like brings light. You'd be looking for somebody that brings people together and brings light.
Yeah, and there's also rhythm in the way they speak. It's just
Let's talk about the rhythm. What do you mean by that?
So there's a sparkle. There's, you know, I come from a background of opera and music, and so that's just the way I just hear it. I see the way people move. I work with dancers too, so that's just how I
love that
visual. So. Yeah. So whereas Marlin might be a little bit, you know, just a little jagged, a little, you know, like I'm okay and then not okay. Mm-hmm. Dory is more the whole time. Let's all, you know, let's put on show, you know. I would want to look at some diversity. There's a lot of amazing actors and comedians in stand-up.
Yes.
And singers.
Oh, so true. You're so right. So then I want to talk about one of my favorite characters along the A storyline, which is the shark named Bruce.
Yes, Bruce.
Oh my God, we love Bruce so much. Bruce.
All about Bruce.
Right? So Jesse, why is Bruce so pivotal to this journey?
So in story, especially in your protagonist story, it's really important that every scene, he takes two steps forward to his goal, but always then one step back, right?
Mm-hmm.
So with the shark Bruce, you meet Bruce and he's this giant, intimidating shark. And you're like, oh my God, he's going to eat Marlin.
Yes.
And then...
Reveal.
Oh, actually, he's a good shark and he doesn't want to eat Marlin. He doesn't want to eat any fish, in fact. Mm-hmm. And you know, this is maybe actually going to be a good thing. And Marlon can get up and feel open about telling them this story and everything's great. And oh my God, actually, they're going to eat us really bad now. And also, it's even worse because they lose the goggles that are going to take them to Nemo.
Sort of the map.
And they blow up the entire ocean with all the mines. So in every scene, you really want to make your protagonist start to learn the lesson, right? He's starting to open up and he's starting to think like, oh, actually, I'm seeing this from a different side. This all sharks aren't bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
becoming
then
open-minded.
Becoming open-minded.
Going with the flow.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And thinking like, okay, maybe the ocean isn't so dangerous. Maybe I could let things that I love out of my grasp for a moment and trust. And then it's all so much worse than he even thought.
Yeah.
You know.
It's pretty relentless.
So, Caroline, tell us about Bruce.
Oh, my God. Large.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to need somebody of a certain height.
Yes.
And the actor is going to maybe not tell the truth about that. And what may be on their IMDb or their, you know, Actors Access might be one thing, but I will always ask.
Mm-hmm.
And if they come in sometimes, I may not measure them, but I'll have something on the wall that'll tell me how tall it's going to be.
What a secret!
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
I'll know if they're, you know.
What size they are. Right. Yeah. Also, in being large, it's immediately imposing, right? If you cast a large actor against a little bitty Marlin, then we have an automatic visual threat, right? Whereas if we cast a little Marlin and then we cast a also kind of little shark, then we don't have as big of a visual threat. And because this is a visual medium that we're in, we need that juxtaposition, right?
I also think of Bruce as more blue collar.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So if we're talking about class,
love that.
I think that's something immediately that actors can grab onto.
I love this.
So,
yes.
And that, you know, he's blue collar with a heart.
Also about the essence of this actor is this is somebody that you would want, right, to see who could both play the kindest, sweetest, gentle giant and then become a ferocious killer.
Yes. And that's when your reel is going to be really important. Because that prior, for this character, I'm going to look at your prior work.
Love.
Absolutely. I'm going to get what I need from the sides.
Right.
But I'm definitely going to want some supportive information.
And so is production.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like they're not going
to get my sign-offs. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, and also, here's this body of work so that you can see. Anything else you want to say about that?
Yeah. I would say, you know, for every scene, for every story, one of the most important things to look at, especially if you're getting this as an audition, is conflict, right? Where is the conflict?
Oh, God.
All story, all drama comes from conflict. All comedy comes from conflict. Everything comes from conflict.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people have a little bit of a hard time seeing what that conflict is.
Mm-hmm.
And I find one of the best ways to be able to see that more clearly is that there's always, in every single scene, an audience is hoping for something, and an audience is fearing something.
Oh, that's great. I love the idea of hoping versus fearing because we're hoping that the shark is good.
And we'll help him get on his journey.
Because wouldn't it be great if he had this giant shark on his side?
Absolutely.
And we're fearing that the shark is going to eat them.
Exactly.
Right. Even though we know, chances are this character's going to keep going. The degree to which the suspense and tension can be held is the degree to which we're engaged as an audience.
Exactly.
And so as an actor, your job is to know whether you're auditioning for Marlon and this is one of your scenes or you're auditioning for Bruce, that this sense of fear and tension is important.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Now, I want to talk about a thing that I think happens all the time because writers are slammed and they don't often have the time to write sides for the characters that they need to write dummy sides for. But there's actually three sharks.
Yeah.
And so I would not at all be surprised if in the casting process of this, that an actor was given the shark sides for Bruce, but it was actually to be seen as one of these other two sharks.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I want to mention just one other thing about Bruce.
Tell us about Bruce.
Because Bruce is one of the first characters we meet in the second act. act. Mm. So the first act is generally like the ordinary world where your character lives in the beginning, right? It's where they're most comfortable.
That's the coral reef.
That's the coral reef.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so like everyone there is kind of small and they're colorful vaguely nice, right?
Yes, right.
And so then you journey out into the deep, dark ocean and you meet this person who is the opposite of that, right? Oh, he's large and he's sleek and monochromatic. Mm-hmm. And you can take little keys like that, I think, in audition, like with what you're wearing, right? Mm-hmm. If you can know right? Yeah. If you know that everyone from his world is, you know, colorful, then dress in something monochromatic.
And any wardrobe person will tell you about how they use color and quality to help tell the world of this story.
Exactly.
Just as important as the scenery or the music or any of it.
Yeah. And just real quick, if any listeners don't know Act 1, Act 2, Act 3.
Yeah, let's hear it.
If you're coming in for a movie, generally it's a three-act structure. Mm. If you cut a movie into quarters, the first quarter is the first act. That's where the protagonist is most comfortable. The next two quarters are the second act. That's where he gets thrown into the shit and horrible things happen, and he slowly figures out what he has to do to change. Mm-hmm. And then the last quarter is the third act, where he has to change and win because he has changed.
Love that.
It's great. And actors, when you get the sides, if they haven't cut those page numbers off of those sides and you don't have a script, that'll at least tell you where you are in it.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't tell you, this is literally what my life is, you guys, that I will have an audition and this happened to me like earlier this month. And I said to Jesse, what's page number 27? And Jesse said page number 27 was.
So 27 is around the end of the first act, the beginning of the second act. So it's when the main character is deciding, all right, fuck, I can't stay in this comfortable place anymore. I have to choose to go out on this journey.
Okay. And literally my character for this audition said, you have to do this. You have to go. You have to do it. And you have to go do it this way. Do it this other way other than what you've been doing.
Great.
And I was like, well, that would be absolutely correct. You know? So the more you understand about story, the more that I understand what my job is and how can I fulfill it.
And from my point of view on my side of the table, do you have an understanding of where you are in that story?
Oh, I love that.
Because it never begins at the beginning of anything. It's always in the middle of something. So
yes,
you need to lead me. Uh-huh. I can't be ahead of you.
Oh, that's so true, because that's the audience too.
Yeah.
Like the audience – the greatest storyteller keeps us on our toes about what's coming next.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Okay, so now let's really talk about relationships. I really, really wish that somebody had sat 2007 Audrey down and said, listen, do you know what's the most important thing in this business? Relationships, relationships, relationships. And now more than ever, being able to maintain relationships is such an accessible thing. You can do that through several ways. All relationships are valuable. Just because you don't have the resume yet to work with an agent that is exciting to you doesn't mean that you won't in a few years. And growing and building a relationship now is one really great way to sort of be planting seeds. I want you to think seeds. You're not going to go grab an already sprouted Christmas tree. You're going to plant the Christmas tree seed, and it is going to bear for you a beautiful Christmas tree years down the road that gives you lots of presents in terms of incredible jobs and acting opportunities. You can do casting director workshops. They're online right now. They're virtual. I think that's such an exciting way to have some more intimate time with a casting director. And they're seeing you on a screen. And seeing you on a screen is how people see you when they're shooting things anyway. And then you can get used to this really weird thing of like, what is an audition on screen? What is an audition via Zoom? What does that look like? How do I connect with somebody? How do I take advantage of the frame? All of those sorts of things are things that you can do that can be both valuable to your execution skills, and also you'll be growing fans in casting.
If there's a show that you really like, start following the directors on social media. And don't be a crazy actor. Just start following them. See what they post. If they post something that you authentically think is interesting, then authentically like it. If they say something you authentically think is interesting, then authentically comment. People can smell intention. So make sure that your intention is as clean as you can make it. And a real solid fanship of somebody and a desire for a collaboration of a kind of work that is being executed is so something that we're all interested in, no matter which kind of creative you are, whether you're a writer, whether you're a director, whether you're a DP, whether you're an actor. All of us are looking for people who are creating stuff in alignment with a sensibility and a style that's exciting to us. So if you came out of this 1 to 2 year period and you spent that time earning, creating hills of investment, filling in some holes of debts, working on your execution, being an audition, execution, one take, story ninja, working on making sure your materials are in sync with your casting and your essence and what you bring to the table, and that is seen. And that the thing that you are saying you are castable in is something that is shooting in your market. So researching what are things that shoot generally in Los Angeles? Who are the showrunners that always work here? Who are these A-list stars that always work in LA? Making sure your headshots and your footage is in alignment with that alignment and intention, so that your casting, the casting that's being looked for in your area, all match up in the materials and the headshots and the footage. And then nurturing relationships in managers, in agents, in casting directors, in writers who are successful and writers who are developmental, in directors that are successful and directors that are developing their career. But really creating fans, creating people that you're a fan of and building those relationships on, and people that can see that they could and should be a fan of you. If you walked out of these 1 to 2 years really having invested and worked properly in that way, you are setting yourself up to be a person that people are rooting for when roles start coming back. And I've had success with that, that as my career has been able to be built and I've created fans along the way, and I've created a body of work that people can depend on, and I've created a consistency of execution that people can depend on, and I've created like financial health so I feel I can take risks and invest and take my job seriously, that's setting up like a healthy growth environment for your career. So planting your Christmas tree seeds now, so that way the tree will start to grow, and when it's time, that will happen. So I hope that provides some clarity. Otherwise, what I did, and I don't recommend you doing, is I took it all very personally. I took the recession and the writer's strike very personally and was really mad and felt like I was doing something wrong. And then when the recession sort of chilled out, I was so fragmented in my belief in myself and really felt that I was, you know, had really messed up something and was trying to solve something within myself because I had messed something up, as opposed to surrender. And what I think that had the effect on my attitude and the effect that it had on my quality of life, actually, I can see now, pushed my progress back even further because I had to get over a massive attitude problem and have some healing in that before I was really in a position to be collaborative with people, to work in a way that was solution oriented as opposed to problem focused. So I just adore you all. I hope that's helpful. We will do more episodes on that. I just want to sort of, as we're prepping season 5, I want to leave you with that. And follow me on social media because I'm talking a lot more about that. All right. I love you.
And now back to your regularly scheduled program.
Let's wrap up with the tank. Yeah. Okay. Oh. So many great opportunities with the tank.
All right.
But Jesse, tell us the general function of the tank.
Well, the tank is essentially Nemo's prison, right? Yeah. So we're in the B story. Mm-hmm. Nemo has to escape this tank in order to get back into the ocean and get back to his dad. And so this tank becomes kind of his new family. And so there are all of the people that teach him all of the things that he needs to learn about himself in this tank. That's the characters that surround him. And also the tank itself and the environment is all dangerous. That's the other part, is he has to learn that he can deal with danger and that he can overcome things.
And there, I think it's important that they're all supportive, but a little bit incapable.
Yes.
Because if they were supportive and capable, he wouldn't have to become the capable person within the tank.
Exactly.
But it's because they're all so supportive, but also, you know, the one is obsessed with bubbles. The other one sees herself and her quote-unquote sister in the mirror. You know, there's just like a lot of Daffy going on here.
Yeah.
Gil has a busted fin, you know.
He pushes things too far.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so it's really up to Nemo to then save not just himself, but really the whole tank eventually.
Yeah, because he's the hero of this part of the story.
I love that. Right?
And everyone else is either making that harder for him or making it easier.
So I would be really looking for, I would imagine, if I got audition for, so if, I just want you to know, for me, if I got an audition for any of these roles, I would know very much that whatever was written is going to be rewritten or could be rewritten.
Right.
I would think like they don't care as much about what was written and you fulfilling what was written. What they care about is supporting and caring and also not particularly helpful.
Yeah.
And I would be looking for those qualities in me no matter which sides I get.
I think the only things that you actually really need from any of these characters is, I think Gil has to also have a bum fin. And
so another actor with disabilities.
Right. And also they all have to be essentially larger than Nemo.
Right. Because
he's the only one that can fit into the thing that can save them at the end.
I would super pitch myself for Auntie Deb.
I would also consider you for Peach.
Oh, which one's Peach?
She's the starfish.
Oh, I would love to play Peach. Her name is Peach. I just love a sweet little Peachums, right?
Yeah.
And I love that her name is Peach, because then that tells you about this character, right?
I mean, if you're not a Peach.
I mean, who is? For real, though. So good. Right. So let's talk about Gil then, because I do think it's important. Another thing that I would be looking for Gil, in addition to an actor with disabilities, is I would be looking for an actor of a certain age, because it's very important. He's lived this life and been here for so long.
It's somebody who has sailed the seas.
Yes.
For real.
You know, for real. Yes. You know, and and is weathered and has, we've seen the marks, you know, just like the rings of the tree. It's that, and that life has lived that history.
Like an actor with actual physical scars would be great. It'd
be really cool.
It'd be so good. Any other thoughts that you have, Caroline, about people in the tank and the world? And do you feel like that's something that probably with production you would talk to them about, their openness of just generally creating a new cast of characters that are all sort of quirky and...
They'd have to be very different.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and I think that's great because they are completely different fish, right?
They are.
Different colors, different textures, the way they move, how their give and take throughout the whole tank life.
Yes, right.
And it's the best part of the casting.
I think so.
Right? It really is.
It's really fun.
Yeah. And it's just, that's when you can really bring in your friends.
And
all of the people who you've been working with for years, or those people that, darn, I haven't been able to find that thing for you.
Rooting for them. Because it's not such a large role that you feel like people couldn't.
They would have time.
Exactly.
They'd have time in between other things to come in and do this. And how fun would that be to play for a day or two with all these other people?
Oh, so much fun.
So.
And they also have to be big characters, right? Because they're in a glass tank. They don't have sharks and mines exploding and giant things to progress over. They're all just stuck in this one room the whole time.
And so why is that important?
So if they're all like a little dull, It's like every time we'd go back to there, we'd just be bored, right?
It's the story equivalent of a Geico commercial and why I book them all the time. I always say, like, the reason why Geico is so weird is because it's selling insurance. Yeah. And there's nothing more boring on earth than insurance. And so they have to make it so weird and random that it just fits.
Yeah, what's happening in this tank has to be just as interesting or exciting or fun as like running through minefields or bobbing on jellyfish or whatever.
Right?
And so the only thing you have really is their personalities.
Yeah. And it's, you know, when we get down to this part of the casting, it's usually toward the end.
Right. Yeah.
And this is after we've seen everybody. So maybe you've gone in for those larger roles and we've got that tape.
Yes.
And so I want to say, oh, remember this person who you liked?
Yeah.
You saw this person for this. Yeah. I want to just offer them this other role.
Oh, that's
can we just do this? So that happens a lot. I can
see a ton of people who audition for Dory getting Aunt Deb. Mm-hmm. Right?
Or Peach. Yeah.
Yeah. You just a bunch of them. Right. Or a ton of people you audition for the Sharks.
Yep.
Getting other members of the
group. Right. Gil, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Totally. Yeah. Gil could absolutely be
And it's timing. Mm-hmm. So it'll be a lot of comedians. It'll be a lot of comic people for sure.
Yeah. And I think so much opportunity for diversity of age. Mm-hmm. I think it would be hilarious if Peach or Aunt Deb was this little senior citizen.
Like, I love that so much. Cute,
right?
I mean, I'm all over that.
Right? Like, did you watch Superstore?
Oh, yeah.
You know, the actress who just passed and she was like a character like that, you know, somebody that's just really, you know, senior and so sweet. But and she doesn't need to get out of the tank. She's fine.
She's good. I'm good.
She's good.
You know.
She's just going to hang out there, right? Yeah. I really love
it. And then
that.
They all get out and the very last thing is like, now what do we do?
You know? It's so good. It's so good. That's the spin-off we really want, right?
I know, right? Yeah,
exactly. What happens to that guest character? Great. Okay, so I feel really fulfilled. I think that was so great. Do you have anything you want to add, Jesse or Caroline, about any of that?
Yeah, I would just say, you know, one of the things that you might think about when you get an audition, now that maybe hopefully you understand the hero's journey and the character arcs and where they're going, is if you're getting an audition for one of the heroes, then think about that. Mm-hmm. But if you're getting an audition for one of the side characters, see if your job is to make the main character's journey harder or to help them.
Ah, that's so smart.
You know, if the main character is trying to get through a door, are you trying to make sure they don't get through that door?
Mm.
Or are you trying to help them get through that door?
Yeah.
Right?
And it may change scene to scene.
Yeah, exactly. But the main character in every scene is trying to do something in that scene.
Mm-hmm.
And so just, are you trying to help them do that? Or are you getting in the way of doing that?
I have to say, you saying that, like, I know that I'm married to you, but like that brings so much clarity to so many auditions that I can think back to that weren't quite executed to my standards. And I think it's that very clear understanding of like, are am I helping them or am I hindering them?
Yeah.
And then which ways is Audrey, what I bring to the table, known to help people, Audrey Hill's actors, or to hinder people, right? Yeah.
So I think that's one thing you can ask yourself. Another thing is the hope and fear.
Mm-hmm.
Just remind yourself, what does the audience watching this, what are they hoping for and what are they fearing will happen in this scene? And how do you fit into that hope or fear?
Again, I know I'm married to you, but I'm going to write that down. Hope v. Fear. It's the title of our new podcast, Hope v. Fear.
And the last thing is, you know, it's a little harder to tell sometimes, but are you helping teach them the theme that they need to learn by the end?
Mm.
Or are you reinforcing their original belief that is the opposite of that theme?
Mm-hmm.
Often, you know, sometimes that's not part of it, but if you can know what that is, sometimes you can bring a little something extra to it because you know that.
And I would say that's harder in television, in my opinion, because the arcs are set up differently. And, you know, we are taking we're starting with the most classic, most brilliantly clean story written, right? So that we can illustrate all of this and know that it is sometimes harder in some of the auditions you're going to get because they're not written to perfection. And you have to understand, in understanding what the story requirements are supposed to be, you then can understand as an actor what leaps you're going to have to make in your acting because the writing actually doesn't support that leap.
Yeah.
but you know that it's necessary and it's what they're actually asking for you, but they have to get to a commercial fast so that to cut those lines that you would normally have as a human being saying those words to get that person to that place.
Yeah.
And you have to take that leap as an actor.
You have to fill it.
You have to
figure out how to fill it. That's your job.
That is exactly right.
And I want to add that how you are at the beginning of the scene is different than how you will be at the end of the scene.
Yes.
And even with redirects, we keep getting that same read all the way through. And it's, you have a journey from the beginning to the end. Mm. And then that's, you know, you may get a 2-page audition. You may get a 20-page audition. Mm. And it doesn't matter. Each one of those scenes, you are different from the beginning than you are to the end.
And I also want to really emphasize that often that's not in the writing. And I really want you to understand, I have worked many auditions. I have booked many a job where it was not in the writing. Mm-hmm. And I could see that there was a beat being played twice, or there really wasn't a different destination, sometimes in the one scene, or often, because you also need to have an arc between your the beginning of one scene to the end of that scene, but also each scene needs to progress. So if you've given three scenes,
the whole thing.
Then there needs to be a change between scene one to scene two and scene two to scene three, and a big change between scene one to scene three. Mm-hmm. And again, often the writing doesn't support it. Mm-hmm. And so your job as an actor is to see that it doesn't support it and then fulfill it anyway. You have to do their work for them sometimes because they just don't always have the time.
A lot of times they don't come on the line. Mm-hmm. It's in between the lines. Mm-hmm. And I would say actually in between lines where the good stuff is. So.
Well, I really want to thank you,
for
coming. I think this was so great, you guys. I really am so excited about this.
Such a great idea. Thank you for having.
I was voted best ideas in junior high school.
Stop.
That's real. But I just want to say about what you do, and just so everyone understands about your big, beautiful, giant heart, is that I'm just so impressed and honored by all of your incredible work, your passion, your true, true care, your passion for empowering and nurturing the artist and the actor and helping people really, truly fulfill their dreams. I can see that that's so real for you. And that's why I don't cry. It's okay if you cry. Everyone cries here at Audrey Helps Actors. Everyone cries. It's good.
I mean, that's just
But, you know, I really wish that actors could see one of the most exciting things about getting behind the mic that I've done, and also my journey as an actor, is getting to know casting directors in a more full way and really seeing how much love and passion. And I hope you guys can see why, if you are introverting your talent, if you're not getting your talent in front of casting, I think you're missing out on important data. I just really think that you are. And I try to get this so clear to all of you that it's not like they're not like around because people just kind of feel like it. Like that casting is a vital, vital part, and they're deeply unrecognized in this industry, and we hope to change that. But if you can get the casting right, you've done 90% of the work.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, I'd say 99.
Yeah, 99. That all everyone has to do is show up. And then you can worry about the camera, and you can worry about the light, and you can worry about sound and all of that. But if you can nail casting, it's just, it's like everything can fall into place.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. Yeah, I really appreciate that. And and having a forum to talk about this amazing film.
So good.
It's so nice and to be able to take it out of context.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I think that's going to be helpful for all your listeners.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.